Okay, we're live. So thanks everybody for coming to the Heart in Focus. Let me get this going. I believe that we were referring to page 13, but I think we were right about page maybe 26. Does that sound right, guys? Anybody have their latest markings just to verify that I have it right? I think we had gotten through step...
About
25.
Did you get
the extra
book yet,
another
book?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
$30 paid to Pam.
I had us at... We had talked about the, kind of the exhibits. We introduced those.
Oh, yeah.
So I think we had left off. We had talked about the financial planning, and we had gone through some of the exhibits, and you guys might remember I had mentioned like 400 times about homework.
They didn't get very far last week.
That should, yeah, I know, that's his fault. So that's, so I think that's where we are.
I have markups on 24 and then...
So I think we're at the top of page 25. It should say developing a financial plan. Is that what you guys see as well? Okay, so we're all there. So let me get to that slide so that we can be on the same page here. Okay, so any of us that have worked in industry or anything have probably been to classes, seen things like this where it's a continuous cycle. I'm starting with assessment, using that to set goals, doing implementation, then kind of a checkup and an adjustment. Sounds like crossroads, doesn't it? So it's a pretty proven cycle. There's probably 30 ways to say this, but nonetheless, that's where we are. So we're going to go in a little more depth now about some of these items, and hopefully we have a little bit more homework than we did. Kelly, I have our. Sorry. Do you want it? No. Okay. With that in mind, the first thing we talked about was this personal financial snapshot. So that was in our homework pages. It was on page 11. It was one of the reference documents that we had done. And so, obviously the couple of things the book highlights is that. You know, the key to moving forward is knowing where you are. So that, I guess, makes sense, common sense. We talk about this, I'll just read it. The personal financial snapshot is a tool to identify material blessings the Lord has given, as well as financial obligations we have. So, it's not, this is my assets and my liabilities. These are the blessings the Lord has given us. Maybe you could say it's God's assets and my liabilities. I don't know, but I think we talk at it that way. The other point here is that they're recommending an annual cycle as a way to view and celebrate progress in financial matters. It is nice to see maybe you've been saving for retirement and maybe the market's been going up and the number's a little bigger than it was last year, or a lot bigger would be good. So there's that. When completed, the form can be a reminder of things to thank God for. It also becomes a tool to identify ways to reduce those liabilities that might be tying us down. So that's an interesting way to look at the bottom half of this page 11, is these are kind of things that are limiting us. I know that, again, everything comes back to Crossroads Litany, but in our Crossroads thing, when we talked about the debt, that St. Mark's took on to build this beautiful building we're in, the classrooms, all that. It's something that I know as a congregation we'd like to continue making progress on because, boy, we'd sure love to use that money for new ministries, for doing different stuff. So it's really no different with us. personally. One should work towards increasing assets with increasing value and reducing liabilities. This is commonly referred to as calculating our net worth. So I guess I'll just pause there, and that's where I think this came up the last time, but talking about one of the worst things we can put on here, I think somebody brought, it might have been Sam, not here today, he's got a lot of good ones. Do you guys remember what probably the worst thing you can do on here was? I think we all agreed on it. What's one of the worst things we can spend money on from an assets liabilities point? Vehicles, cars. The assets just go down right away, and yet that liability, if we take a loan to do it, it just stays there. I think that was a really key insight that we had. The final thing is that remembering that true net worth really has nothing to do with our finances. But really, we look at the worth God assigns to us, and you know, I mean, maybe it's one of those easy classes. How much were we worth to God?
Jesus.
Yeah, his son.
His son.
You just would say, you know, my son Jacob. Go, take him. Someday, anyway.
Only days that end in Y.
Yeah. So there's that. So that's about the personal financial snapshot, the tracking sheet we went through the last time. And I think that takes us through to the end of page 25. So at this point, maybe I'll invite any feedback people have.
One of the exercises we went through when I was with Thrivent was you plan for your retirement, whether it's 60, 65, 70, and then you project, if you're 50, how much money you will need at that age to maintain your style of living. Say it's $30,000. And then you put an escalator in there every year. And people were always shocked. I'm retiring when I'm 60, and I need $30,000. By the time you're 80, you need like $50,000 just because of inflation.
Cost everything goes up.
So that was always a reliable for people that I met with said, oh my gosh, you know,
yeah, that's a good one, Tom. Thank you. Where am I? I need $30,000 a year. Okay, if I say, no, you don't need 30. Mm-hmm. Not gonna be long before you need 50 to keep the same thing. The other one for me, I know when Kelly and I looked at our stuff is now anymore. The advice is plan on living to be 100. And you want, I mean, with all the medical advances and the technology and people just keep dying at an older and older age every year.
The last years are tend to be more healthy.
Yeah, and not the medical side of things as well. So I think that's really good advice. Any other things that you guys saw? Yeah, Steve.
When you start thinking of it, you know, you were talking there, we used to do this thing and you'd sail on it. You were 30 years old and you were making $30,000 a year. You're going to be a millionaire before you retire as an economic earning machine. Can you live on what you earn 20 years from now? Is the big question. You know, and that's the question. What is it worth 20 years from now? $30,000 may have been a very good income if you in 1965. In 2000, it's, you know, it's a. Or people would be very happy to have it, but in the economic strata, it's getting by. I mean, and then where are you in the country? Can you buy a house for $100,000 in Sacramento? It's, you know, worth anything. You know, where you might be able to get one down in, you know, Plano, Texas for that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so it's all relative.
Well, there's a lot of variables. It's kind of funny putting together all these calls. A lot of calls, as you guys know. The way we calculate our salaries and all of that gets interesting when you look at California versus, I think the base is like Milwaukee, and then you kind of go up or down from there. What we find is that our cost of living here in California is, I think it's a tick over 8% higher. And that's, you know, the food and fuel and electricity and, you know, these kind of things. But that's the cost of living. Then you get to the housing,
yeah.
And that's where it is. So that's right.
In some ways, we're cheaper. If you have, you know, people.
Yeah, ask this guy about property taxes in Texas. Right? I mean, yeah. So
yeah, there's a lot of relativity on certain areas, but there are certain things. The housing prices are really just. It depends on where you're sitting on. If you're the owner already, it's a good deal. If you're one trying to buy in, it's not a good deal.
Any other comments on kind of this financial snapshot, assets, liabilities? I think I've heard it said that really the only, I don't know, maybe I listened to Dave Ramsey driving around, but really the only kind of acceptable liability on here is probably a real estate mortgage. That other, because that one is hopefully going up. The rest of these really can be like gold anchors. That's, I don't know if it's true or not, but it's a way to look at it. If you have a bunch of numbers in the rows other than that, then that's probably some. If you have a lot of numbers in a lot of those things, then it's maybe a bit of a red flag.
Ellie said I was the liability.
Yeah, we don't have
a line.
A big line.
In sports, what do they call it? Addition by subtraction? Yeah. Okay, so the second one then was kind of the tracking my spending, and I wanted to pause on there to see if anybody had any ahas or wisdom for the group. So this, it kind of looks like a budget, and this on our beginning would be page 12. Yeah, we're referring back to our reference page 12. If there were any aha moments when we filled these or looked at them or anything anybody wants to share that's not a liability about their spouse.
Well, the one thing my wife and I did several years ago is we got rid of all our credit cards. We only have one now. Mm-hmm. And that was always a juggling act. We got four or five credit cards and some of our $1.13. In the old days, 18%. That becomes a little tough.
Yeah, we have one. I mean, we always pay it off. We have one little escalator if you don't watch it. Yes, Ellie?
With the credit cards too, I mean, a long time ago too, we did the same thing. Got rid of credit cards. And then we checked our credit score. It dropped because we no longer had our credit cards.
Can I tell a story?
Yeah.
So here's a story. We, this was maybe 4 or 5 years ago. How long were we? 17? So this must have been maybe like 6 years ago, we went to refinance a house when the rates were going down. And so, you know, you fed all the paperwork, is our income and our assets and da 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 da. The guy calls me back, the mortgage broker, and says, no problem, everything went through, you'll qualify with what your house is worth and all that. The only thing is we have to get your wife off the loan. What? Says, yeah. So when we got married, we consolidated everything, and I just put her on my credit card. And at that time, when I moved up here with HP at the time, we actually got a relocation bonus, and part of it was they bought down our mortgage 3% the first year, 2%, 1%, the interest rate on the mortgage for a relocation incentive to get people out of the Bay Area. And so that was in my name. The mortgage was in my name. The credit cards were in my name. We go, and she got a really...
I had no credit.
Yeah, her credit score was not great because she had nothing. She had no credit. It said lack of credit experience. But it was like an 18-year-old trying to go on.
Which is worse.
So, yeah. And actually, you know, I don't know if we'll come to that in the book. I haven't read that far ahead. But, you know, maybe we'll let her make the commercial. She works at FICO. But I mean, honestly... Checking on what your credit score is and being on top of that, you really need to know, even if you don't have plans to borrow, it's probably worth the check-in just to see what that score is. Hopefully that's not where you find out, what is that account? Who opened this up? And you know, identity theft. But it's interesting little story. You guys had something similar. And yeah, I told her that's a great deal, right? It's California community property state, so you get half. And you have none of the debt and half the assets.
The last card out, I put it in her name, and I kept one. So we have both had a credit going on. It's, you know, learning those things.
Yeah, that's exactly what we had to do to repair her credit, so to speak.
But you can stop it.
Get her credit card
cards and say, hey, I'm not going to have it. One week, they dropped us because we were nasty. We paid our bill and we weren't, charging up interest, so they dropped us. That hurt your folks. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah,
it's... Honestly, we're doing the right things and so on. But, you know, you don't want to have to track and spend it.
Yeah.
My biggest one was I quit smoking a few months ago, and it's amazing how much you can save.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you don't think of it at that point.
Yeah, sure, that's a good one. For us, I think, looking through it, I don't know that there was, our fuel bill was something that was like, whoa. And, you know, she commutes down the barrio once a week, and, you know, we're back and forth the same march, what, five times a day? During the school year. But, probably you guys as well, driving even farther. That one kind of jumped out, and you start to say, well, maybe we got to buy that next car. I'm going to tell it, God, I've got 40 to the gallon. Because if you drive a lot, you know, just some things like that. I don't know if anybody else, yeah.
I didn't do my homework. I just know this.
How? <But,
laughs> teacher doesn't do her homework. She gets that one.
What's that guy used to say? No respect.
Budgets, I don't do budget. It's internal. But anyway, what I found was that I was a lot more frugal when I had my kids at home. Mm. Single parent, three kids. I was very frugal. I probably saved more money then than I do now when it's just me. That's not saying a good thing, but, you know, because I'm not forced to be frugal like I was then.
There's like a biology principle, something that stress on an organism creates development, you know, something like that. It's maybe one of those principles. No, that's a really interesting observation. You hear that? We got to... These kids start going off college.
Then you can have my sister, who, if she has checks in the checkbook, she must have money in the account. her husband had a full checking account for her. Because she got used to getting overdrawn. What overdrawn? You know? Oh, but she still had checks.
Okay, so any other insights on the tracking my spending? Again, this isn't a budget. And I don't know, I mean, I'm not going to ask the question, but I know in our household, we don't have a lot of variable income. I don't know, Jenny, I'll put you on the spot, maybe not. But so, some people, sales professionals, maybe they have a good quarter and then a hand quarter and then a great quarter. Yeah, you were like that. And so, you know, not having certainty in the income, like, wow, I had a great quarter. Woohoo, let's spend it. No, don't spend it because the next one is not going to be that good. I think some of that. But this is a spending plan. This is something that's very much, I think, the idea is much more controllable. Whereas someone that, you know, like I said, a sales professional that can kind of gyrate it around. Yes?
I think from a teacher's point of view, it would be good to do this with your kids so they know what... Because kids today, I teach them, they have no concept even of money. They because they don't see their parents using it, and they themselves don't really use it a lot.
Yeah.
All they see is their parents using credit. And they don't even understand that credit is money. Like, it's, you've got to have it in order to use it. They don't get that at all.
Well, even some of these terms, we talked about consumer marketing. Well, I'm going to pull some cash out of my house. No, you're gonna take on more debt. Is what you're gonna do, right? So, what are they like in the walls? You're gonna pull 20s out? No, I mean, you know, it's even like terminology.
My son was in Bella Vista High School years ago. We used to help the economics teacher. I explained life insurance. One of the guys was a banker, and he came in. He got to give every one of the kids a $500 credit card. He says, "Go ahead and use it, and just pay minimum." Then on the board, he started calculating how long it would take them to pay off that minimum and how much it would be. He said, "Does anybody want to spend that right now?" That was probably one of the best lessons.
The answer today is yes.
That was one of the best lessons they could have been given. He showed them what it takes to pay off on minimum balance. He said, "We're not giving this stuff away, let me promise you."
No, that's really good.
That's good. I work with a lot of contractors, or maybe if you're a real estate.
Where the income does this.
That, but also that you're not being taxes taken out of that check.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I don't know who, ladies first.
I have a question for the group, if you don't mind. How many people in here do their own income taxes?
Half-ish. Yeah, we stopped. You know, it's funny. We stopped. I'll give some personal insight. We stopped. I mentioned we got moved up here by my company, and it was so sticky about what was income and what wasn't. Like, for instance, they paid for us to live in an apartment for a few months. That was not income, but I think it was a furnished apartment, so that part was. And it was really sticky, and I'm sitting there going, I don't want to screw this up, so I hired a CPA. And he's like, you know, you're very organized. Looks like you're ready to do this yourself. I don't know why you know. He's, oh, by the way, did you realize you're not aggressive enough here, 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 here? And, you know, for the few $100, easily saved it for us every year in finding things. The other thing, staying on top of the law. So that was my own experience. But, yeah, it sounded like about half and half. Chuck?
Yeah, I experienced with our four kids. They're growing up, going to college, and they each have different personalities. Of course, some are better at money than others. But the college deal was they earned some of the money for college, they borrowed some of the money for college, and we gave them some of the money for college. But when they graduated, got a job, our bank closed. And there was no parental.
Yeah.
And they had to make things balance out on their own. And I watched each of them come to that realization, oh, no backstop here.
That third pillar of my financial world.
We've got to make this work on our own, which was kind of interesting, because as long as there's that little bit of a backstop, even if it's not used, that keeps them from really, that real reality of having to make things work.
We're kind of picking up on this twice now, some wisdom here about kids. Maybe we should ponder that and think a little bit about what we want to do about that. I don't know tons of high schoolers. I mean, some of the ones or even early college. I like Austin. He's together. But, you know, some of the other ones. Yeah. You did what? Or, you know, these kind of things. So, yeah. And I think we all, if you don't have the, to Chuck's point, let's have those consequences when you're like 17. Maybe not when you're like 27. And, you know, let's have a screw up kind of, you know, early.
I'll tell you one quick story on one of my sons.
Chuck, are you sure?
When he was like 8 or 9 years old, yeah. He saw this toy that he wanted to have. It was this little amphibious car that went in the water and so on and so forth, and he had his allowance. He got, I think, a quarter a week for an allowance, and he had saved up and saved up and saved up. He had enough money for this thing, but he didn't have money for the batteries.
Oh, no.
And he said, Dad, I just won't take an allowance until those batteries are. And we're talking about months and months and months of allowance. And so, okay, I thought, I'll teach you a lesson. Bought the toy, I bought the batteries and a piece of paper, how much money you owe me for the batteries. And of course, within 3-4 weeks, that toy was sitting aside and it was kind of okay, the fun's off of that. But he was paying for those batteries with no allowance.
Long time.
Unfortunately, I don't think he ever took the lesson.
Yeah, what if Jacob did something like that? He bought those little drone things,
yeah.
And with his own money, and he broke the second week.
Yeah.
Sorry, pal. Welcome to life, right? Okay. So that's good. Let's close it out on the kind of the net worth statement and then the spending plan. On page 26. We're now into the theme of setting specific goals. So this is no fun. Now we gotta put limits on things. I don't know, nobody likes this. I guess sometimes you like the cure, but you don't like the medicine. I don't know what the right analogy is. But looking ahead of when I'm successful, as I nail this thing, you know what comes out, and that was the. Really two things, I guess, the financial autobiography and the financial goals. For Kelly and Kaisa, I'm so sorry, this spreadsheet doesn't solve this one. But, you know, the for the rest of us, maybe people that aren't spreadsheet people, these are referenced on page 13 and page 14 in the very front. So, yeah, I guess I could share mine a little bit on the autobiography. How did I become how I became? So I'll share a little bit off of mine. This is just me, not Kelly. She's not responsible. So for that kind of like, how did your family history, your parents? So my parents were savers and worriers and this kind of thing. Money, like, bad. It's, and so my dad was a depression baby, and he had been through some of that. So saving. And sometimes had a really, what's that?
Not much debt, probably.
Debt? No, that's evil.
Yeah.
Why would you do that? And it was, and I'm probably a lot of us, I see some heads nodding and things. Problem was, I mean, I guess, were you so consumed or worried, or you never creak the wallet open to enjoy these blessings that are there for, to some extent, once you take care of what you need to take care of, it's there for enjoyment and for, you know, your family and friends and those kind of things. So there was that, my personal history, I guess. So sad the way we all become our parents. I'm kind of a, she's not, yeah. I am a stable home. I'm more of a saver and worry and, I can't waste anything. What's that last scrap of food on the plate? You know, I mean, so that it gets, and it carries over. So, I mean, that was kind of some of the things from my financial autobiography. I don't know if others had insights they want to share in front of their spouse like me. Adrian. May not be the same as for another. In your case, it was the college thing. And just, if they're unprepared, they're not going to be ready to deal with whatever's different for their generation, whether it be going to college or whether it be doing your own business versus working for someone, totally different dynamic, things like that. I don't know who was first. Jeff, I made you wait last time.
I grew up on a farm, and there was really no savings. Any money that was there went back into farming, building the farm, and such. There was always debt because you had to buy another 28 or 48% of
keep the farm growing.
But when college time came, I worked on the farm during the summer, and so I really didn't have a summer job elsewhere. And the deal was, well, my parents would help me with college, but there was no dollar amount attached to that or whatever, so I'd have to earn some of my own money, but they'd help me. And back then, tuition was $179 a semester.
Add a couple zeros these days, yeah.
But anyway, so I really didn't learn about saving when I was going to college. I learned how to negotiate for more money. My mother pulled out a letter that I'd sent her while I was in college. Dear Mom, how are you? How's the cat? You know, so on and so forth. You send me $20. Love you. And so it was just after I got a college.
Was that like the polished version? The first version was please send $20. Then it was how are you send $20. Now how the cat $20.
So when I got out of college, it was the same version of what my kids dealt with. All of a sudden, okay, I'm out of college. I'm out of the house. I'm on my own. Fortunately, I had a job, and you know, I had to learn how to make do with what I have.
Yeah.
So that kind of is.
Thanks. I mean, that's really good insight. You didn't bring it up about the variable income, but you want to talk about the all-time variable income for farmer.
Yeah.
Once a year you get paid. You get paid, and that's, you don't know what it's going to be, and that's if it's a good year, and if there's no disease, and no fail.
If it rains. You know,
yeah.
And there are times when they had to borrow money, just to buy seed.
Well, I mean, that's the classic loan. That's where loans came from, is the agriculturalist. You've got to buy seed, and I'm going to get paid hopefully in 9 months. So, yeah, Steve.
I grew up in the, my father was a working class neighborhood. I mean, he wasn't, you know, doing that much. I started at 10 years old with a paper route. I haven't not worked. I kept for a couple of months in there since that point. He was upset when I left the Air Force because I could have made more money in the Air Force than going up there. But there were always decisions that have to be made, and you go through things with it. Could I have made more money? Sure. Could I have ruined my marriage? Yes. This disease really with it. I mean, you push and shove with things when you do. Did I want to go out and be the senior vice president running around the country and not know who my wife and son were? That's a possibility. It was an offer, but, you know, I turned that one down. So those are choices. Am I unhappy now? Did I make as much now? Okay, as the Lord, have I ever missed a meal? No. So we have to look at it sometimes. Is money the object? It was there to help us do things and to get on with it. Does a Honda work as good as a Cadillac? Yeah. It'll get you, both will get you there, you know, in there. Okay? You know, it's what you want to do with all this stuff.
Yeah, no, that's really good. Chuck?
One last bit about that saving thing is, so Maggie and I are married, we have four little kids, never missed a meal or anything, things are fine, we have no money in the bank. And we have $300 in the bank, and it's Christmas time, and Maggie wanted a microwave oven. And it cost about $300. And I can still see myself sitting in the stoplight on the way home saying to myself, okay, I'll buy her the microwave oven, but I'll never be in this situation again. And so she got the microwave oven, but I signed up for automatic payment, automatic withdrawal for my paycheck from the bank. I never missed a penny of that money.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it's, if you never see the money, you never miss it.
Good one. I like that. Yeah, just don't even put it in my hands. I mean, that's one of the things at the very bottom on D, is it talks about how much money will flow through your hands, one way or another. Where it flows out to, we're not talking about that. That's the spending plan. But I mean, yeah, to Chuck's point, even just $10 a week, then it becomes 20, then it becomes 50, then it becomes 100, and you're on your way. But yeah, I mean, what's $10? That's okay. We're not going to McDonald's one time or something. You know? So yeah, that's really good.
When my son again was in end of his sophomore year, he called coming in spring break. He was going to show me how he could save me money by moving out of the dorm into an apartment with a couple of his friends. And they did a wonderful job. They broke down what the cost would be, etc., etc. He said, doesn't that make sense? I said, only one thing I want to know. I put down one word, time. What's that mean? I said, who's shopping? Who's going to clean the house? Who's going to do this? That's all takes time. Who's saying no? I said, give me an answer to that question and we'll see what you do.
Yeah.
I mean, they get the other one. Yeah, they did a wonderful job on economics, but there is a time value to money as well that people don't always look at.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned this earlier too, that it's not all money. Sure, we could get this job and be home 2 days a month and okay, time, right? So, Ellie, I think.
One of the things that I have always been grateful for is that when I started getting an allowance, which maybe, I don't know, late elementary, junior high.
Last week.
We've already established your liability.
But my dad made me keep a ledger. I had to show my weekly allowance. I had to do 10% to church. There was no negotiating that. 10% went to church. I had to save another 10%. And the rest of it, I could do whatever I wanted to. But I also had to keep a ledger.
There's some accountability, what I spent,
and maybe once every other week, or you know, no more than was it ever more than a month. I had to show him my ledger,
quiz, huh?
And I had to show him what money I still had, and he made me keep it to the penny.
Oh, accountability!
But it was a valuable lesson for you know, keeping a checkbook later. Because when we were first married, he was like long gone overseas. I was it. I was doing all the bill paying.
Yeah.
Still am. And once you start, you keep on doing it. But that lesson, you know, and I was thinking about you with your kids and anybody, you know, that has kids, you know, have a people ledger, because there's value in knowing what you have, giving to God, saving, and not touching that savings, you know, for whatever. And I remember at some point I had enough that it made worthwhile putting in the bank. But it was a lifelong lesson that I learned back when I was, 11 or 12 years old.
Yeah. This is such good stuff. Sorry, there's hands everywhere. I can't remember who was next. Is there somebody? I think Brett had his hand up before.
I was just going to say to that comment, I think we took the financial piece, Dave Ramsey thing, back in 2008 or something like that. But he always recommended with allowance to do it, children always break it down into small amounts. So like if you give them $5, don't give them $5, they'll give it to them ones or whatever.
Dimes, yeah.
So they can see actually how you break it up. If you give them $5, they're going to overspend it, but if you give them 5 ones, they can have a jar or whatever. This is the church fund, this is the saving fund, this is my fund one.
Good.
And then it's easier for them to visualize.
Good. So we're back to this. We're back to this concept of training our kids again. This is keeps coming up, and I really like the accountability factor that Ellie brought up. Is there somebody else? Anybody else? Yeah, autobiography stuff. What we learned.
I got a bigger picture. I got a call from a pastor friend of mine. He's in charge of all the financial retirements for our synod. And the challenge they have is people are living longer.
Yeah.
And taking, so the challenge of our synod now is to build up that fund, which has become a little weak, so that people can get more money and sustain that a longer time. So there's a big challenge of, you know, you talk about our debt.
Did you forward in the case study of the city of Stockton, California? It's the same thing in the public sector with these pensions for the retired workers, and they're living forever. It's taking, and what are they doing? They're nailing the new guys that come to work. Give more, give more, give more. It'll never be there for you, but give more, give more.
And the people are staying healthy longer, they're working longer too.
Yeah.
65 is no longer the retirement age.
Yeah, no, at the age 65, you go into retirement. Like I said, this earlier when we did our own little assessment, the fact that you have to plan on being 100, so I can't retire at 48, this stinks. All right, let's move on. So that's the autobiography. The next one then is life values. So this one might get really, there's some of this we already talked about. This is one that they actually talked about. Maybe we want to break into some smaller groups on. We're kind of behaving like one big group, so let's just keep this going. I think everybody's exchanging pretty well. So this is page 14 in the front, for anybody that doesn't have it. This is your life value. So this kind of goes to, okay, money is one thing, but let's talk about some of these others. I don't know if people had eye-opening or there was negotiation or what or anything like that, just glancing through it. Any comments or learnings here? All right, I guess that
could.
I put faith first. I tried. And mission and ministry showed in somewhere in my top few. It kind of goes to a couple that I rated high that kind of maybe go to the autobiography is things like freedom and future security. I'd like to be free to, this is kind of something we've done. We have two incomes, we're locking on everybody else that. I'm free if I wanted or she wanted to go. She's done this. She tried to start, she went to a startup and a couple times, and that was good. No, but she went to Kelly. Kelly, my wife.
Oh, your wife. You refer to her as she. I was kind of wondering.
That other she.
Stop. something like give you freedom, right? Or you know, one of these things, again, if things, you know, there's, I've known people that are in an awful, awful work situation. And sometimes it may give them freedom to just go, you know what, buddy, see ya. Some freedom like that. So that kind of probably influenced some of my values. Future security, it's high on my list, and it's such a panacea. You think you know all you. We talked about this a lot. That you think you can get future security with money. You're probably going way down the wrong path. Look at Sam and Linda. They really told us. We were set, RV, you know, we're cruising, and then we're raising our grandson. And, you know, things like that, right? So if you think you know, definitely I was like nodding my head a lot when those two were talking.
Always remember the one that the farmer, you know, that's in the Bible, tears down his barns on one of the bigger ones and live there. And God says, fool, your soul is required of you. So you're never secure in that respect. It's going to be called when it is. And Paul's, I am happy in whatever state I am. I can remember eating rice and beans because we didn't have anything, and I was just as happy with those days as I am, you know, with the others. They were just part of life, and if you live with that one, the money side of it, somehow we always seem to have enough, and never enough.
So you weigh life experience number one.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Yeah, very good one. I mean, you can laugh with a lot of this. I always joked about it. I said, you will always, whatever your income is, you will spend 10% above it.
You make more, you spend more.
Yeah. I don't care if you're making, you know.
But let's ask it this way, especially like you three guys have been saying a lot. And you have to look back, maybe a little, or you look middle. You look forward and you look back. So you're kind of in the middle. And then you've got, there's some young people in this room. So when you were the age of, there's these two. When you were that age, did you have the same point of view? Did you? Probably not.
I was young and dumb, man. I was.
Yeah. Luckily, they're young and smart. So it's just interesting how it changes. Once you've gotten beaten up by life and some of these financial things, then you know, all of a sudden I'm smart. But if I wouldn't have gotten the beating, I probably never would have been smart. So, yeah.
We can teach by our example, and you don't have to go through that much more.
Yeah. So then the next exercise on here says, try this. This one was interesting for me. What percentage of your finances would you anticipate to be appropriate for each of those five choices? So if you were going to talk about the envelope system last week before, whatever it was. If we had envelopes for every one of these things, and you're going to put some money in each one, how would that go? You know, if you had $100 and you were going to put some dollars in each one, how do we put money in your family's well-being or your life experience or these kind of things? Is our money where our mouth is on this? My money and my mouth didn't come out so well.
It's hard to put. I mean, can you put a dollar amount on faith or relationships?
No, but if you were going to, I mean, I'll push back on you a little, just for the sake of discussion. So are you, relationships, are you willing to spend, your marriage relationship, are you willing to spend $1,000 a year to go on some really great marriage retreat for 3 days and really work on, maybe not the best example, but you know, you could probably challenge it on all your resources, your time, and treasure. How do we invest? Right? Anyway, like I said, when I looked at what I said my values are and what I do, wasn't always perfect. The final thing then, what does this tell you about where your finances will go? In my case, it'd say, it may go to other things. The fourth thing, analyzing your present spending patterns. Are they in line with our values?
Yeah, I have another question.
Yeah.
So as I look at these, I can see where age is obvious, but I can see where there's a male-female thing going here. Mm. So I know it doesn't say anything about that, but it would be interesting to compare, okay, this is the five values your husband has, these are my five values, and how do we mesh those?
Sounds like we do need a marriage ceremony.
I hear her say, how do we mesh those, not how do I make mine right?
You didn't even raise your hand.
That's right.
And you didn't make a motion. Every time I'm up here, you try to do that. There was a hand. Was it Kaisa? Did you? Yeah.
Brian and I kind of did the same thing. Probably every 3 years, we just kind of put down a couple of our personal financial goals totally separately, but we're sitting down at the same time, you know, sitting on the couch and saying, okay, just spend a couple of minutes and write down some, you know, financial goals. When we were younger in our marriage, those things were very, things we wanted to buy, right?
And then, wouldn't it be cool if we had this?
Yeah, and then as we got, you know, when we had kids and stuff, things changed. The things that we wrote down were different. But what I've noticed is that earlier on, our five things were a little bit more separate. You know, there was a few things on each one that was more separate. And then as we go, you know, longer, things are becoming more aligned. We might have, you know, one purchase that we wanted to do on our own. But it's just, I think that because in the process of doing this, you get to know each other's, you know, things, and then you realize that it's really not, it's about our family unit,
yeah,
you know. So it
cool.
was a good process.
Good story.
And it was totally okay to have some things that were on the list that were not, like, were independent of the other person, and we didn't.
Yeah, it would be awesome if you had a bike and you had a, you know, that'd be fun.
But
guess what? We got two kids.
The bike was always on there.
Yeah. Oh, the bike was awesome.
I'm making fun of her. You guys don't know. They show up. We like a barbecue. And he has his poor Ryan. He'll make sure he's here. Says this in big letters. I love my wife. Oh, you're sick, Ryan. And then it says, I love when my wife allows me to something something
to go ride
my bike. It was really funny. So, anyway, maybe as a season. So then the final one is my personal financial goals, and this kind of fits really well with what was just being mentioned. And funny, these are all good goals. None of the get deep in debt or buy a car that devalues 40% when I drive it off the lot. And none of these things are on the list, right? But I don't know, as you guys glance through those, if there's anything that that you guys see or that you want to comment on.
It just doesn't say it in the biblical terms. It says it in parentheses.
Where is it?
Making major purchase.
No, I mean, yeah, making the major purchase. What I'm saying, what's not on there is, I buy this car, and 2 days later, it's not worth as much. And you never plan to get yourself in a bad financial situation. But yeah, a car is on there. I'll give you that. I don't know, anybody? Yeah.
And we joking when we first got married. I told her I'm buying a Corvette. Then we had a baby. We put the car seat in a Corvette.
So that never happened.
That never happened, so we want, you know, I mean, but that's...
You're not dead yet.
I am in one way. My knees will not allow me to get in unless you have a Derek to pick me up.
Keep the dream alive, Steve. This is not helping.
My CRV works much better.
Yeah, thank you. Tom?
The one that kind of stood out for me, which is really hard to get your arms around, is save for emergencies. I don't know. Put aside money and say this is for emergencies.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like with us, I mean, we have some savings. That's, I don't want to use a lot of money, so if I have to, I'd rather buy a bike. that saving for emergencies, come on, really? Maybe somebody in this room has it, but you're sick if you do. Chuck.
Well, you know, I went through my working life at a time when the economy generally was really good, and I really never worried about not having a job.
The income.
And so I never really saved for that emergency yet. These days and going forward, I think that's one thing that families need to do more of, is the reality is you may be out of a job or between jobs for a period of time longer than you think.
Yeah.
And I remember when I changed jobs the first time, I was about 30 years old, my dad grew up during the depression. I was all excited about my new job, and he said, Chuck.
Are you insane? Yeah.
You have a job. You should keep your job.
That's
a different generation. I think we're getting a time when you can't take for granted that we'll always have a job.
Yeah, that's really interesting. There was a time, well, it's still going on, but there was a time when I was a manager, and it was really heavy layoffs all the time, every quarter, laying people off. So the managers actually were getting a little bit trained on some of, I mean, it's not your son or your daughter, they're your employees, but if, you know, kind of, a lot of it was to, you heard what they're hearing in their training. Once they got identified that they were going to have to go, they got put in a training class and stuff. And to your point, some of what they're saying now, I mean, this was a few years ago, but they were saying, traditionally, financial planners will tell you you need to have, 6 months. They're saying now, 12 to 18. That's what it's taking, because they have unemployment, and then a new one that I've been hearing more about in the last 5 or 6 years, what they call underemployment. So, yeah, I'd like to, I'm trained as, I don't know, an electrical engineer, and I'd love to have a job in Intel. I'm selling TVs at Best Buy, because that's what I can do right now. And so there's that underemployment as well. So, yeah, there's that. The other thing I'd say is it's gotten even hyper worse, Chuck, about this not changing jobs. It's to the point now where, I don't know, maybe some of you are in doing more hiring. Kelly does it. To the point where if you look at somebody's resume and you see that they aren't moving every 4 or 5 years, changing companies, changing jobs, it's a black mark on the resume. See? Well, what? You don't move around? You don't want a new challenge? You don't? It's flopped that far to where if you're staying in a job a long time, the guy reading the resume or the woman reading the resume is saying, oh, yeah, they're lazy and stale.
We actually flip it to our advantage to some degree. So our target market is all head of banks, the chief risk officer in a bank. And because they tend to move every 2 to 4 years, we follow them bank to bank and just sell into the next bank that they go to. So it kind of works as our advantage.
Yeah, that's good. Leads, built-in leads. Huh? Did I miss a hand somewhere? Okay, so trying again with mine. I must be a Freudian slip. Twice I wrote on here, retire early. so I would love.
I mean, I'm 70. I'm not retired yet. It's still too early to retire.
Yep.
If I retire,
my early and your early, if our clocks run.
Because if I retire, she's going to make me work.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I mean, I know in like church council settings and just the informal conversations around here, you look at especially, probably maybe especially a little bit in the past, but even recently, some of the younger people that are retiring maybe at 60, 55, 58, what they're able to accomplish around here, because they're still young, they're strong, they're healthy. Keith and Donna, look at these two. They're beasts. They knock out so much stuff. So, I mean, it's you know, things like that, right? So, okay, that's my warning that we're not going fast enough. So, I think we've gotten through those. So we should be through page 26, and we're talking about implementing. So we've got... No, we need to knock it off, don't we? 10:30. So once again, we didn't get through. Guys, what I am going to say, though, is that I think we will probably go ahead and dive in on session two for the next time. We've talked to a lot of these things already, and it's clear to me that we're mostly sharing wisdom rather than having a bunch of eye-opening experiences here. So what I'm going to say is when Mr. Bauer gets back,
okay.
Everybody nods their head that we got through section one and that we're on to section two. It's a conspiracy. It'll be just like in the classroom when he leaves the room. Yeah.